Welcome back to what could be the last edition of the live version of Truth Jihad Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett, on the eve of destruction, at least according to Art Olivier, who thinks that tomorrow morning, that is tomorrow, Saturday, November 26th, 2016, at 10:26 a.m. Central Time, 11:26 Eastern, etc., etc., we're going to have a massive EMP burst over Texas, and that is the end of the internet and the end of computing, the end of electricity, the end of a lot of things, including probably Truth Jihad Radio, at least until everything gets up and running again, and who knows when that would be. So you better enjoy this radio show because we only have 1 hour left, according to Art Olivier. Let's use it well and bring on Vinnie Eastwood. Vinnie Eastwood is one of my favorite people in the alternative information world. Vinnie Eastwood is not only funny as all get out, but he also has pretty decent judgment. And he recently published a piece that is more, I would say, more good judgment than funny, really. It's the joke is on us. The joke is on the people who voted for Trump. His piece is called Congratulations, Order Followers. Trump's administration is filled with New World Order frontmen and dark occultists. Vinnie, you know, you're already saying, I told you so.
Yeah. I mean, I felt it was comfortable. I wanted to wait a reasonable amount of time to do a modicum a bit of research on all of Trump's background, cronies that he's thinking of putting into the positions, as to whether or not he's actually just a New World Order plant and just playing everybody. And immediately, Freemason, Council on Foreign Relations, Council for National Policy, and all of these big think tanks and globalist organizations and things like that start popping up, Skull and Bones, Goldman Sachs, you know, just the whole thing that we went through with Obama.
Oh, all the hope and the tenderness. I'm gonna have a throat orgasm.
You know, just that feverish pitch that everybody was up and thing, and then the Obama deception comes out, and okay. So are you telling me that the politician that filled me full of hope and joy was actually just lying to me so he could get my vote and continue fulfilling the massive totalitarian agenda that consists of quasi-billionaire black nobility that are kind of dotted throughout the place and sort of interrelated by marriage and not, you know?
Such a thing has never happened before.
I mean, you know, it's just
inconceivable, you know, nobody saw it coming
except me, you know, apparently. I just like, okay, I interviewed Ed Opperman from the Opperman Report once about Trump, go into his background, pretty straightforward, he's in with the gangs, all right, the mafias and whatnot that run everything and ran the casino business back in the day, who you had to do business with in order to run a casino in that time.
Well, what is the casino business? I mean, come on. And who did Trump get his first casino business from? It was from the Meyer Lansky mob. If you look at where how he came up, I mean, this is the most made man ever.
Yeah. He was, you know, I'm a self-made man, really. From that small loan of $1 million that your daddy gave you, is it, you know, you're self-made, are you? Look, I don't like making predictions. I prefer making assumptions because assumptions are very reliable, right? Let's assume for a minute that there's two possible candidates for president. And let's assume that they're going to fill their cabinet full of scum like them. All right.
Now then
assume that you've got a vote or a choice in which one of them to vote for and which one do you vote for, right? Now, I have heard this point made to me so many times that I'm flexing my hands in fist-like formations as we speak at the thought of it. Oh, it's the lesser of two evils. Oh, you would have voted for Clinton then? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, no. See, here's the point over here, and this is what you did. You went straight past it. You completely missed it. It's a little bit of attention needs to be paid. Okay, do you remember the last time you voted? No. Okay, well, let me remind you. Somebody got up there, told you everything you wanted to hear, then you gave them your vote, and then they lied, it as it turned out, and did the direct opposite pretty much.
Wait a minute. Are you telling us that President Obama didn't end all spying and snooping? He didn't close Guantanamo. He didn't end the wars.
Well, as far as I know, it's the direct opposite. He opened up other Guantanamos and expanded the wars and had more drone strikes and more this than that and the other, and even more surveillance than
ever
before.
So these guys don't keep their promises? You don't think Trump is going to keep his promises?
Here's the thing. They not only don't keep their promises, you can basically take to the bank that their promises are the direct opposite, all right? Now, I'm usually correct about 90% of the time, and the 10% of the time that I'm wrong, it's because the outcome was worse than I could possibly imagine. All right, so
even we can't imagine some of the stuff that they apparently can.
You can't make this stuff up, and that's how zany and crazy it is. So when I see the bulk of the right wing libertarian truth movement way in behind this guy, like way past journalistic integrity point, I'm like, bing, 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 huge alarm bells going off. And I'm like, messianic figure got everybody on his stripe of the political spectrum, even the people that know that the stripe of the political spectrum is a false dichotomy, and get them to support you anyway. How did he do that? Why did he do that? Well, the why is pretty easy. It's because the right-wing alternative media actually has quite a lot of pull and more listeners than, in many cases, the mainstream media ever could hope to have, right? Alternative media is just exploding all left, right, and center. So you've got to cover all your bases, especially in an election this heated, right? So I think Trump just got it made, you know?
Easy. Yeah, that was actually a smart move, I think, because, you know, Fox News, you know, used to pretty much bring in all of the kind of right-leaning people. And then some of them woke up, you know, I think under the Obama administration, in the same way that sort of people who self-identify with the left and the liberals and those people woke up when they saw how obviously evil Bush and Cheney were. Well, then on the other side, a lot of people woke up when they saw how, you know, the evil policies under Obama are horrendous as well. And so those folks start to look around and say, well, you know, maybe Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly aren't telling the full truth. Maybe I'd better go look at some of these alt-right websites. Maybe I'd better go look at Alex Jones. And, of course, they have a big audience. And so Trump comes along, and he needs not only the people who are still watching Fox News, who are mostly geriatric at this point, but then the younger people of the same ilk who are now watching, you know, Alex Jones and Breitbart and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, those people, I guess they've heard of the term New World Order, but maybe they need to do a little more research.
Well, that's the thing. Anybody who does a second's worth of research, and that was the entire point of my article, is that you only need to do 1 to 2, 3 Google searches of somebody's name plus the word Freemason plus the word Trilateral Commission plus the word Council for National Policy to find out whether or not they're on the side of the New World Order. You are who you associate with, and people who are on the side of humanity do not belong to these clubs, many of them, let alone one of them, right? And in a lot of cases, it just seems like people that are really, really, really nasty and are willing to do anything to get to the top, and will stab anybody in the back, including the entire country who voted for them, right? And I see other people voting for them anyway, and I see them arguing against me, and I see them saying, oh, Vinny, you're all just being cynical, you know, he hasn't even become president yet, or he hasn't even fully appointed his cabinet yet, or whatever. And I'm like, okay, dude, have you ever driven way, way too fast around a very, very tight corner with a massive cliff on one side? And you think to yourself, you know what, maybe I should take it easy. Maybe I should put the brakes on for a second and actually approach this with a level of responsibility. No, your approach is, let's just she'll be all right. You know, let's just trust that gravity will be with us on this one as we fall to our deaths. All right, that's the level of stupidity that we're dealing with. All right, and I was just thinking about this. This is the hashtag to end all hashtags. Hashtag know what you are up against. Because my goodness, the amount of people out there who literally believe anything that they say without even taking the seconds that it takes to Google somebody's name plus another keyword or something like that to find out who they're really working for. Oh my God! Oh my God! All right, like that's what happens in my brain. It jumps from, you know, that's actually not a very wise idea because they've been shown to be sociopaths and they will manipulate you and they will lie to you and they will destroy the country. So it's probably not the best choice for you. And it just skips straight from that to,
oh my God, you just hurting my brain places with your stupidity, and you're not only doing that, you're trusting things you know you shouldn't trust. You've already learned this years ago. Oh, why can't people see through the veil of stupidity? It's unbelievable. Oh God, just over the top. You should have seen me. Just oh God, it was just breathtakingly frightening.
And I always wonder, how long will it take for some of these folks to become disillusioned? You know, I remember back in 2008, some of my friends and family members, in fact, practically all of my family members, voted for Obama. And of course, I didn't. I voted for Cynthia McKinney, who would have been a vastly better president. And of course, that's why they would never let her get near the Oval Office if they had to take her out. But anyway, I voted for her. What the heck? I mean, you know, I want to vote for somebody who actually would be a good president if they were president. You know, that's my criterion. And all these friends and acquaintances, everybody was drinking the Obama Kool-Aid. And, you know, let me name a few names. Jim Fetzer, my old buddy, Jim Fetzer. He's a very bright guy in certain respects. But he drank that Obama Kool-Aid, and it took him, I don't know, like 6 months, I think, about to really regret it. And now he's been drinking the Trump Kool-Aid, and I think he might already be starting to notice that he's going down the same path he went down with Obama last time. But he should know better. I mean, you know, Jim is a retired McKnight professor of philosophy from the University of Minnesota. He knows how to do research, and he can look at who these people around Trump are. And, you know,
I don't know, man. It's making the assumption, oh, I know what I'm talking about, or oh, I know how to do my research. That's how they get you. That's how they slip one past you. Because we all trust, right? It's not about trusting Trump. It's about trusting the other people in your life that are saying that Trump is trustworthy, right? The people in the alternative media who I'm now starting to think knowingly lied to their audiences for the ratings. All right. I do one article about Trump. I get 3,000 hits. I normally get maybe a couple of hundred different people visit my website every day, and I get 3,000 hits in a day just like that for mentioning Trump. I refused to cover the election at all or pay attention to it at all until two points emerged. One was who actually wound up being president. I don't care up until that point what is going on in the election, what people say, what is happening, right? Don't care. It's all posturing, and it fills you full of craziness, real time-consuming craziness, and you argue with people fervently about shit that doesn't matter and is irrelevant for the most part, okay? That is not a productive use of my time.
Well, another aspect of this is that putting your misplaced faith in some godlike savior who's going to turn things around and, you know, make America great again. I mean, come on, people. I mean, it's not going to work that way. I mean, you're not going to fix things just by having some superhero on television who mouths a couple of sound bites that sound pretty good. And a couple of Trump sound bites sound okay. I'll give him that. But, you know, and Obama sounded pretty good in certain respects, too. But just having somebody, you know, mouthing sound bites on the screen, and oh, that's my savior. He's going to make everything right. If I go into a voting machine booth and pull a lever for that person, then our problems will be solved. No. I think there's a little, if you want to solve those problems, probably you're going to have to get out and work a lot harder than that.
Voters never take personal responsibility for the choices they make. Okay. Like if you vote for someone who destroys the country, and don't get punished for that mistake and never apologize for the damage that you caused, and neither do any of the politicians they elect, and you think this is going to change something for the better? No.
Well, maybe we need a law, you know, prescribing some kind of punishment for people who elect these criminals.
Well, what if it's like if you elect somebody who destroys the country or just makes it worse?
Of course, that is sort of its own punishment.
All right. And it's a well, the thing is, you should be withdrawn from the eligible voting population for at least one election cycle, or at the very least, you have to perform a course. This is just me, by the way. I'm not authoritarian or anything, but this would just be fun.
I've got a better way to fix this. Here's what we do. It's like so easy to rig voting machines and voting booths and stuff. I mean, the election, it looks like it was totally rigged. We're going to maybe have a recount here in Wisconsin and over in Ohio and wherever else. And, you know, maybe that'll fix things. But here's what I think we need to do. We need to get those, you know, the Diebold and these guys who manufacture voting technology. And we need a special new form of voting technology. And here's what it would be. You'd have like a trap door in the voting booth. And if the voter pulls the lever for a mainstream candidate, the trap door opens up and they fall down into a pit of slavering hyenas. How's that?
It'd be slightly worse than what I was thinking. I was more like, you don't get to vote next year and you have to sit a course. And the course is labeled, do a simple Google search on who the F you're planning on voting for, you idiot. All right? That's that 101. There is a 102 course for if you don't get it the first time, just Google the name with a couple of keywords of scumbaggery, and it will light up like a Christmas tree.
Wait a minute, scumbaggery?
Oh, God.
Eric, last time I Googled scumbaggery, it came up Vinnie Eastwood show.
Yeah, well, there you go.
That's because you invented the term, not because you embody the concept.
Apparently, I didn't invent the term. I've seen instances of the word usage of scumbaggery out there. Even a friend of mine even sent me a video of Bill Burr commenting on something and using the word in casual phrase. You know, it's like, it's the thing.
Okay, well, it's like the CIA and conspiracy theorist. Okay, they didn't quite invent it, but they really popularized it. And the same thing with you and scumbaggery.
Well, it's more like an onomatopoeia, something that sounds like what it is.
Exactly. That's why it's such a great term. So we find some way. But see, if we're going to punish voters who vote for these idiots, number one, we're going to have to punish a very large percentage of the population. Number two, exactly. We're going to have to end secret voting. And how are we going to do that? I mean, are we going to have like some kind of way of identifying these people?
Ah, well, I didn't have time to go into the minutiae of the plan. The whole idea is simply to, like all laws, what they do is they frighten people into obedience. And the obedience that you're supposed to pay some attention to is taking personal responsibility for the actions you take and the choices you make, right? And that's the entire point of the law there. You have to research who you're voting for. And if you do vote for them without doing your research and it turns out they've deceived you, provably so, you don't get to vote next year and you have to sit a special course that will teach you how to simply Google somebody's effing name.
Well, wait a minute. So, but some people are going to say, okay, so I Google these people with these terms, but wait a minute, Vinny, you know, what does this really prove? Because sort of, you know, almost everybody who's, you know, taken seriously by the establishment as a foreign policy expert of any kind, and even a lot of folks who aren't, but have reached a certain level of prominence, ends up with an invitation to one of these groups, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations or what have you. So, I mean, they're all going to probably have.
If that was one or two people, maybe. But when it's the whole cabinet, including the president, then there's no wiggle room on that. Okay. The deck is stacked on one particular side. Now, furthermore, to finding out who somebody's group of associated scum are, then you've got to look into their own history and the things that they say. For example, Trump said, I think it was in a 60 Minutes interview or something of that nature. I can't recall exactly what he said, but he said something along the lines of, if I was going to run for president, I'd be running in the Republican Party because their voters are so stupid that I could tell them anything and I'd probably have really good numbers.
Now, is that apocryphal or is that an actual Trump quote?
Yeah, well, that's,
it's true, but
yeah.
Whether or not he said it.
I put it on a meme somewhere, but it's just like, you've got to be freaking kidding me, bro. Right? It's like things are so obvious when you do the minor amount of research. And the problem is, though, it's obvious to me because I've got maybe 8 years of talking to some of the biggest heads and researchers in the truth movement on my radio show, and one after the other after the other. So I've got an incredible brain full of other people's knowledge, other people's recognitions of patterns and things that they see in their daily life to do with the powerful, the wealthy, those who are psychopathic liars and so on and so forth. Interestingly enough, I read an article the other day, said there are 8 modalities of mind control. And I also watched a video explaining the characteristics of a narcissist and how they use people. And you know, it was really interesting. The way a narcissist uses someone and the way a mind controller controls someone are almost identical techniques.
Really? And that's also the way a politician gets votes.
Yeah. Now, think about somebody who's grandiose. Oh, Donald Trump. Think about somebody who lies all the time. Oh, Donald Trump. Think about somebody who surrounds himself with a whole bunch of glitz and glamour and that kind of thing to improve himself. Oh, Donald Trump. Think about somebody who's got a trophy wife. Oh, Donald Trump. All right. Narcissism. There was actually a professor, I think, at some university, who said that he is now including Trump in his presentations to his psychology students about narcissism, because in all his years in the business, he has never seen such a glorious diamond of narcissism, like absolutely embodies everything so succinctly that it's like the purest specimen of narcissistic scumbaggery he'd ever seen, and he just had to teach his students it.
And now it's on display for the whole world to see on television nonstop.
And I don't watch television. All right. Now, this has been a turning point for me in my life. Like, this is the first election that I have largely ignored and yet couldn't get away from.
Yeah, well, if you're not interested in war, war is interested in you.
Yeah. Everything. It was just pouring out of the YouTube feeds, all over the billboards and stuff like that. You know, everybody's talking about it. My friends are talking to me about it. It's like, dude, I don't care. Okay? I don't care. As soon as I know who's actually going to be your next ruler, who you're going to vote for, willingly giving up your power and your ability to have your own freedom to somebody else who you don't know, and never did 2 minutes of research of your own into, who you believed everything they said and everything the people you think you can trust said about him. That person you voted for, he's going to betray you, bro. Surprisingly, you know, you probably wouldn't have seen this coming unless you'd seen this thing before called an election. All right?
Well, yeah, but Vinny, I actually, believe it or not, I do vote in American elections, and I vote for people that I've looked into. And, you know, most of these scumbaggery types, as you so eloquently put it, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me. I mean, of course, I'm not going to vote for these idiots. And the mainstream party candidates almost always fit that mold, although I voted for Bernie Sanders just because there was a little bit of a breath of fresh air thing going. And he's obviously not a complete psychopath or narcissist. And he has some interesting ideas and was actually campaigning on proposals to try to make life a little easier for people in tough
Bernie
situations. So I thought, okay, I'll vote for Bernie. That's the closest I ever came to voting for anybody mainstream. But, you know, I voted for Cynthia McKinney in 2008, Merlin Miller, my friend Merlin Miller, in 2012. And I voted for Jill Stein and my friend Ajamu Baraka, although I don't know if he can admit that I'm his friend anymore after they witch-hunted him for having appeared on my show and contributed to my book and all that stuff. But I'm voting for basically good people. I have looked at these people, and these people I voted for president since 2008 and even before that have all been pretty decent people. And what I can't figure out is, why are these people that I'm voting for getting, you know, 0.5% or, you know, 1% or whatever, this ridiculous fraction of the vote? And everybody's voting for these blatant psychopaths, narcissists, and clowns. I don't get it.
It's because I've come to this realization that I've got narcissistic tendencies, right? And I don't like it, and I feel that I'm a bad person because I do this, right? So I try to do the direct opposite in my daily life. I try to not use people. I try to help people. I try to do the opposite of everything that my nature tells me to do. And the hope in that doing is, if you commit good deeds while you still believe that you're a bad person, eventually being a good person becomes what your deeds are. And eventually there's no difference between the good deeds you do and the man that you are.
Wow, you know, that's really interesting. That's the sort of the mirror image of the path of the Malamati Sufis. And I was influenced by that when I was studying Sufism in Morocco. I learned about the Moroccan Malamati tradition. And those people try to basically show that they don't care what anybody thinks about them except God by cultivating blame. They call themselves the people of blame. And so, you know, they'll go to the mosque with a bottle, it looks like a flask of vodka, in their hip pocket. It's actually full of water. People, like, you know, and this was the hardcore crazy Malamatis of the Middle East. But in Morocco, the way they show that they don't care what anybody thinks of them except for God is that they tell the ruler off to his face. They go to the sultan or the emir or the president or the CEO or the mafia don or whoever it might be, just walk right up to their face and tell them what an asshole he is. And if you live to tell about it, it's probably because the sultan knows that, you know, this guy is kind of, you know, he only cares about God. Maybe he's a little bit close to God. Maybe he's one of those awliya or saintly people who are close to God and have a certain kind of baraka or spiritual energy that's going to bite me back if I do anything bad to this person. So a lot of these Malamati Sufi saints could get away with really just brutally telling the truth to power. And a bunch of them
are probably narcissists, because that's actually one of the mind control techniques as well, is to promote guilt on your followers and to reject the outside world and outside people's opinions and outside information and things like that, so that you become a secular tiny little fraction, and you use terms and language and ideas that only the people that are really in your circle understand. The rest of people don't know, and they think that you're just kind of nuts. They don't know what you're doing.
You know, I think I could be a little bit guilty of that, especially back in the old days.
That's the problem. When you look up narcissism and the techniques that are used to control people by a narcissist, and then you look up the mind control techniques and what they've done on everybody, you realize that everybody has been used by a narcissist and is currently under a form of mind control. Everybody, without frickin' exception. That's like the most scariest realization. And it's coupled with a unique phrase. How do you know if you're under mind control? If you don't think you are.
Okay, so wait a minute, Vinny. Just because I don't remember ever having been hypnotized by an MK Ultra mind control programmer, that means I was?
No, just remember, mind control is also a bunch of very, very simple techniques. Sleep deprivation, control of outside information, stopping people from contacting their loved ones, group isolation, and repetition, and silo mentality. Like, if you're in a group and you say something that's not meant to be accepted by the group, everybody starts to crack on you until you conform. You know, these are
things that's like the Moonies. These are like cults.
Well, yeah, exactly. But it goes on even further than that. There's a claim of truth. There's a claim of magic. There's a claim of unquestionability. This is the one truth, and you can't question it. This is the one a person who is the dispenser of truth. This is the person who through whom all truth flows, and you're not allowed to question that. And I'm just like sitting here going, I'm like, oh my God, bro, that was exactly like when I was in church, like as a kid. The only reason I went there is because I was bribed with ice cream.
They gave you ice cream in church?
No. You got it afterwards.
I thought they used like wine and pieces of bread or something.
No. Got wine. I had to get it afterwards, because otherwise I'd feel Catholic guilt.
I see. That's very interesting stuff. Well, I was a lapsed Unitarian, so I got ice cream without even being dragged to church when I was a kid. but as far as the narcissism angle, you know, yeah, Trump is such a classic, obvious case. I think we're back to the sort of Bush era in that respect, because Obama is pretty slick on the surface. I mean, he really comes across as a sharp and well-spoken guy, you know, and he doesn't seem all that super narcissistic or anything like that. He comes across pretty well. Before him, Bush and Cheney both come across pretty badly, in my humble opinion. I mean, to me, it's like obvious that these guys are really bad news. And Trump, too, looks to me like it's just obvious that he's really bad news. And do you think, Vinny, that with this kind of extreme, you know, narcissist who really probably is not happy that so many people hate him so much, you know, he's the most unpopular person ever to be on the path to being president. Do you think that they might be able to con him into going along with, let's say, another 9/11 type scenario because they can tell him, well, you know, well, you'll have 90% popularity ratings during the, you know, 5 months of total public shock after this city gets nuked, and then you'll be able to do anything you want. We'll push through something sort of like the Patriot Act, except it's even better, and you're going to be basically the real decider that Bush thought he was but really wasn't. What do you think, Don? And, you know, I don't know. Do you think he's the kind of guy who might go along with that?
Well, I don't know. If you wanted to sort of do it all, it's... If you've got those cards on the table, just remember, hashtag, know what you are dealing with. Right? Who's going to say no to that situation when saying no is certain death? Right? Is it just like, hey, do you want to pull off a fake terrorist attack and blow up a whole bunch of your own citizens so that they'll love you and give you inordinate amounts of power to go off and create wars in other countries for no friggin' reason other than profit and geopolitical control? Well, I'm not really feeling it, bro, but if you say so, let's do it. You know, what's the worst that could happen? what's the worst that could happen to me? Because the thing about narcissists, and I know because I am one, but it's a spectrum. There's real bad narcissists, and on the other side, there's actually good really good ones. There's really good ones on the other side of the spectrum, like Bruce Lee, Muhammad Ali, these guys. Because narcissists don't have a sense of self beyond the clothes that they wear and the actions that they do, they don't have so much of an internal power as other ordinary people without personality disorders do. So in order to create a sense of self where none actually really exists, they have to do a whole lot of accomplishments and things of this nature in order to create an image of a sense of self that cannot be destroyed. Because if you take a narcissist's coat off and you reveal him for what he is, and it's all lies, it's all fake, he gets destroyed as if you killed his body, right? That's how bad he would feel. But if you're a really good narcissist on the benign spectrum and you don't actually like lying, you don't hate people, you don't want to use them, you don't want to do all of these things, you feel like it sometimes, but you restrain yourself because you don't have that inner, I'm me sort of thing, because you're always missing something. You always have to do good things for other people, because despite the fact that other people, you don't want to use them or whatever, you need them to appreciate you and to love you and to care about you. And so that's why you do so much nice things for them. It's not just because you want to do nice things for them. It's because you have to in order to survive.
You know, Vinny, I can feel a self-help book coming out of you. I could see a multi-million dollar self-help book on, you know, like, you know, finding your inner benign narcissist or something like that.
No, won't work. If you're in the malignant spectrum, incurable. Even in the benign spectrum, incurable. What you have is what you got. It forms in early life, so however much trauma and lovelessness and betrayal by the people that are closest to you that are supposed to be in those positions of trust or whatever, the more rigid your neural pathways become. So when other people get offended or insulted or something like that, they think about it first and then they go, you know, that's really not nice, and then they react. The other way of doing it in the narcissism is it turns into a reptilian brain response instantly. An insult comes through the inputs, the eyes or the ears, Vinny Eastwood is this or the other, and all of a sudden the heart starts pumping really quickly, the adrenaline starts going, and the aggression, bring a bazooka to a knife fight, is the nomenclature, right? That's what it's like when you're insulting a narcissist personality. And I've just sort of like trying to understand the condition a lot more. And You know what's worse about it is the more I research narcissism, the more I find out how much of my own characteristics embody it. And what's even worse than that is I find out that all the evil people that I expose, that I don't like, that I think are needing to be dethroned and exposed, are just like me.
Yikes. So like you and Trump are sort of mirror images somehow?
Yeah, it's like... If I'd been born with as much money as power, you know, in fact, this was something I was riffing on earlier, you know, I talked to myself just to work things out in my head kind of thing. It helps to say them out loud. And I was thinking, whenever I have power over someone, like real tangible power, I can fire you sort of thing. I don't like that idea. Something in me goes, no, I don't want to have power over anybody else. I want to warn them about what, you know, can happen if they subject their responsibility to someone like me, right? I want to warn them about what happens when you give power that can't be questioned to someone like me. That's bad. That's why I've surrounded myself with people who know what narcissism is, who can expose it, who know what lies are and will expose it. Because if I ever actually do turn toxic, haven't yet, keep doing that self-analysis thing, but if I ever do, the best thing that every member of my audience, every guest I've ever had, every friend I've ever had can do is expose me and tell people, look, Vinny's not Vinny anymore. You've got to turn him off, bro. You've got to cut off his food supply. Otherwise, he's going to hurt people.
Well, so if Fox ever hires you, that's what we have to do.
Oh, yeah. Just right like that, you know.
I could almost see it. I mean, I could see you, like, you know, going over to the dark side and doing this kind of, you know, conspiracy comedy for Fox, only you would, you know, change all your conspiracies to suit what they want. You know, sort of like what Alex Jones does most of the time these days.
It's just like, I couldn't do that, though, because...
You'd be a great Islamophobe.
Well, here's my problem. I'm not only a bit narcissistic, but I've also got complex post-traumatic stress, which is a complicating factor. So I'm somebody who is very, very fragile, but also extremely confident, right? I'm somebody who really hates being around people and wants to be alone a lot of the time, but needs the limelight and needs to be on stage in front of everybody. Like my entire, if you look up the characteristics of these two people, it's like one created the other and the other is its bitch. So I'm my own bitch.
Well, you know, we're all a little bit like that. You know, you sound like Dostoevsky's underground man who's, you know, I absolutely hate people and shun their company. And then I have to seek them out and harangue them. And I have no interest in continuing to talk with you, but I'm going to keep talking your head off because I don't want you to define me, because I want to be able to define myself. And when you look at me with that gaze that reifies me and makes me into some object that you can, you know, peg a label on, I don't like that. So I'm just going to keep talking and I'm going to keep jumping out of your categorizations and keep contradicting myself. And that way I'm in control of my own subjectivity.
And I talked to G. Edward Griffin about this. And he said, the problem with trying to categorize people is that often they'll display characteristics that are complete contradictions to some of the other things that they believe and say. But what appear to be contradictions on the surface sometimes are actually just gleanings of a deeper personality and more complex character.
Okay. Well, sometimes. Because, of course, you know, what Emerson said something like, I embrace contradictions. A foolish consistency is the hobgoblin of little minds. And there's something to that, right? That you know, basically every statement we make in language and even every idea that we have is a distortion of reality, because reality is the whole thing and encompasses the yin and the yang. And so when you say something, it's either going to be the yin, a little too yin or a little too yang. It's always going to be taking some aspect of reality and, you know, exaggerating it. You know, so all speech in a way is hyperbole by its very nature. And then to balance it, you almost do have to bring out the opposite, right?
Always. And I see people doing this in their daily speech all the time. Oh, I really am very concerned about the Muslim immigration problem, but I know Muslims and they're nice.
that's like Trump. They make all the Muslims register and they're all terrorists. Those are my best friends are Muslims. They're great people.
Yeah. Well, as the comedian Steve Hughes said, political correctness is just intellectual colonialism and psychological fascism disguised as thought crime.
Okay. Can you parse that for me?
Yeah. I think that we've got this real problem in society that hinges upon our own identity, right? And the way that we are getting through to people in the large part of the truth movement is that we're awakening them to new things, things they didn't really know existed before. I seek to go a little bit beyond that, and I want to awaken people to their own ability to awaken themselves from their own awakening, because what's really, really terrible is looking at somebody who's found out that the elections are a scam, totally believing in them, and totally being sold on it again, just like they were sold the last time, and not learning the lesson. And there's a philosophy that says every bad point in your life, every pain, every suffering that you go through is a lesson waiting to be learned. And if you don't learn the lesson, a cycle starts. And once you come full circle in that cycle, the pain will start again until you learn the lesson. And if you refuse to learn it again, the cycle starts all over again.
The election cycle starts all over again.
Exactly. People have refused to learn the lesson of history, and we are all suffering for it continually because people do not awaken to this very important truth that as soon as you start believing someone without any research to back it up, as soon as you start wanting a savior, as soon as you do that, you've given up your responsibility. You've given someone else power over you, and you may never get it back. And you certainly won't get it back without taking responsibility for your actions.
Well, you've used the word awaken quite a few times. And, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I had Paul Levy on the show. His website is Awaken in the Dream. Or no, Awaken in the Dream? Yeah, something like that. Anyway, something about awakening in dream. I think it's Awaken in the Dream. Anyway, he says that we're all essentially living a big waking dream. Reality is a waking dream, and we're all co-creating it. And he has this quantum physics explanation for how that works. But the stuff that manifests is essentially a message to us about something that we need to fix or to work on. And he thinks these political candidates and these elections manifest aspects of ourselves that we deny. So for, you know, 8 long years, George W. Bush was this, you know, hideous mirror image of the part of ourselves that we try to repress. And now the same thing is happening with Trump. Does this make sense to you?
Everybody does the exact opposite thing that is good for them, because whatever is good for you will hurt you and will be uncomfortable for you to hear.
No, the truth sometimes hurts. That's true. But it heals as well.
It hurts a little. And it never heals fully, right? Part of you breaks and it mends and a scar comes over it. And that little area is a little overly sensitive for the rest of your life. Right. That's what I found. It's like having scars on your mind. Every single moment of disillusion when you go, man, I can't believe in somebody else that's going to save me anymore. I can't blame anybody else for the situation that I'm in. I can't look at having an organization to solve this problem for me. And the only way out of it is to have no excuses, is to have no way out. Ironically, it's at that moment of desperation where people's illusion of what they tell themselves they want to hear disappears. And you suddenly realize, God, my whole life, all my beliefs, everything I've actually really come to hold dear was just lies that were shoved down my throat by somebody with a really, really bad personality disorder.
Well, you know, sometimes I think that Philip K. Dick book, Clans of the Alphane Moon, which is about a planet where people are categorized socially according to their neuroses or psychoses or personality disorders. It pretty well describes Earth. You know, the paranoids are like really militantly nasty, and they're like the spies and the cops and stuff. And down at the lower level of society, there's the hebephrenics, who are these, you know, kind of skitsy people who just kind of wallow in the mud all day, not getting anything done. And it's a very, very interesting sort of metaphor. But people like, what's his name, who did Snakes in Suits, that psychopathy expert up in Vancouver. What's his name? Anyway, the guy who wrote that book, Snakes in Suits, made a very good point. Well, Hare, I think, is his name, that these psychopaths do have a lot of advantages rising up in power. The same would be true of narcissists in politics. And so your personality disorders really do probably add a lot to your potential to make it big in this kind of society.
Yeah. It's not a mental illness. It's a personality disorder. You know, they're different. But here's the thing. All psychopaths, all of them, are narcissists. But not all narcissists are psychopaths. Right? Now, if you, and narcissists really hate being criticized, and psychopaths only fear being exposed. And they also manage to get themselves to the top of organizations very, very easily by sabotaging their competition with lies, you know. And they are now on top. Guess which two personality disorders got taken out of the all-powerful Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Illness?
Which one?
Narcissism and psychopathy.
Really?
Removed. Yes.
So they don't exist anymore? Year.
No.
They've been abolished?
It's not that they don't exist. It's not that they don't be abolished. It's that the pharmaceutical companies have now decided that they don't want to treat people for it and don't want to prescribe them a drug. So if there's no personality disorder on the DSM that's being taught to all the new students and they don't recognize it when they see it, they are easy prey for those predators, right? And this is what you need to think about, is that it's not a human being that you're dealing with, all right? Human beings crave love and togetherness and peace. Think you're actually dealing with a predator. They crave money, power, and sex, and will kill and hurt and lie and cheat and deceive and do the most insane things that you couldn't even conceive of. This is why, you found out somebody in your life is a really malignant narcissist or a psychopath, you can't do anything to help them. And every time you try, they will betray you.
And you probably shouldn't even vote for them. And I guess we're going to have to leave it there. Vinnie Eastwood, I appreciate your amazing, excellent work. As radio competition goes, you're right up there. When I grew up, I would like to be Vinnie Eastwood. Your website is thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you, Vinny.
When I grow up, I'd like to be me too.
All right. Well, someday, maybe.
I'll let you know if I ever do.
Okay. That's good. All right. Take care, Vinny. Have a good one.
Cheers, bye.
This is Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. Back next week, same time, same channel. Revolution Radio. My website is Truth.
Listening to Revolution.